And behind that is population. If we see out-migration, that could be an issue as well, because we've seen a little bit of that. Although, you know, loads seem to be fairly stable, I am concerned about out-migration. Well, and especially when we were talking prior to the meeting a little bit about, you know, housing in the three communities. You know, certainly if folks can't find houses to live in, that will be a deterrent for growth. Always good to keep that in mind as well. And on page 17, we added this page in here. This is a quick snapshot with the latest information we have on total revenue through April. The rest of the packet that the motion described is the approval for the March, because we closed March. So, just to give you an idea why that's in here. But we wanted to give you the most recent financial information, as you know, we have quite a few conversations on how we're handling these big expenditures and where we're at on the budget and how that blends into the rate increases potentially down the road. So I think it's just our effort to give the board a little bit more information.
So as I look at that, we're up about 18% overall, like that, sales.
Oh, I think it was, let's see, yeah, approximately.
That's all right, just ballpark, we're up.
Yeah, well, we're up. I tend to more look at what we've got. We're up about $644,000, so above budget. So I mean, you gotta use that as a litmus. If you look over the prior year, obviously we're way up on that because of sales were declining. Yeah, pretty spot on. Robert's highlighting some areas there with the typical megawatt hours year to date for a comparison. On page 18 of your packet, just a couple of brief things I'll point out here that are somewhat helpful and maybe blend into some other discussions later. You can see the self-insured risk fund balance is not $8 million. It's, we've drawn off that a little bit as of April. We'll start seeing some major milestone payments hitting here pretty shortly. Also, if you read down the left column there, you'll see there's a DNR reclamation fund balance listed on there. And that's most close to the bottom there, Robert, and 1343,472. And I just point that out because there's an item in our board packet that we'll discuss how the efforts to separate the DNR reclamation fund. It's really the only outstanding item from restructuring. And then we got the grant summary on 19, pretty self-explanatory. And then we move on to page 20, which is essentially the Q1
financial. Before you move off of that, back to that chart, you see the self-insurance fund. We did reduce that a number of years back, if I remember right.
That's correct.
Reduce it to 8, is that correct?
Yes, it was 10, and we reduced it to 8. And then that $2 million that was in there got moved over to the new generation fund.
Okay.
That's how that was originally funded.
Thank you.
Yes. And just I'll just add one to your point there, Bob, is for the benefit of other folks that might have not been here. The reason that was reduced is at the time, did a 4-hour plan update, indications of the cost of the submarine cable and or insurance deductible had been reduced. And there was actually quite a bit of pressure from the board at that time to reduce our reserves. So that's why it was reduced. But clearly there's a need to review that as we enter into the 4R plan that they want. So, with regard to just the financial packet, I'm happy to answer any questions on that. As you can see, things are relatively stable across the board. Would anybody like me to speak to any particular items?
Anybody have any questions? Again, thank you for all the numbers and the straightforward presentation. Gives us an idea of where we are in this particular point in time, so certainly appreciate that.
Yeah, and it's not without a lot of help from Kay. I'll add that. That'll take us to page 30. And Robert's inserted an updated photo there. The last thing I heard from Clay is that things were under control. And I'll follow up with a phone call here in just a second.
So, thank you.
Yeah, certainly. On page 30. Is just an R&R summary, the capital expenditures, and I mentioned those earlier. We've only spent about $1.5 million so far in 2021 expenditures. Those will accelerate considerably here in the next quarter or two. And then that takes us on to the disbursements list, on starting on page number 31. And that would be the financials. Happy to answer any questions on any item under the financials.
Any questions? Hearing and seeing none, we do have a motion on the floor. With all questions, Sharon, would you please call the roll?
Will Flynn?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
And Coos?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That brings us into whole business. Before we update on the operating plan, that's on page 33, I believe.
I think Trey stepped out, so Mr. Chair, you don't mind I take over for this section?
Go ahead, Robert.
Okay, so operations plan update, we do this, the board asked us in 2020 to begin these updates quarterly, and so we have done, I've been putting together these quarterly just for quick updates and where we are operationally, where the lakes sit, and how healthy are we looking from a reservoir perspective. So far this year, we are in excellent condition. If you look on the third page of that, Tyee is sitting at 1,338 feet, and so that's about 60 feet from spill. And if you look at the snow surveys, I think we have somewhere around 80 to 90 feet. I'll look at those real quick. But we have more water in on the hill in snowpack than we do available in the lake. So, yeah, 159 feet of water on the hill at Tyee if we were to spill it, or if we were to release it all at once. And this, of course, this was back on April 14th, so this was a few weeks ago. This number has dropped. But we're looking really healthy in terms of lake levels, both at Tyee and Swan. Swan Lake is sitting, as of the date of that report, 311.6. It's gone up a few feet since then. We're following the guide curves at both Swan and Tyee, but we're well above them, so very healthy lake levels. Kind of wanted to go over the STI daily megawatt chart. This is how we operated the last 4 months, and this is how we prevented spill back in January, utilized that prevented spill stored to make it through the turn, as we call it, until the spring snow melt begins, and then we started shifting power back to the north. So this first part here in January, we had quite a bit of rain. We hadn't got to the cold snap yet. We had a lot of rain, and Swan Lake was sitting at elevation 340. If you recall, we spill at 342 right now, according to our operations plan for 2021. So at 340, we moved up to 341, and we were just right there on the edge of spill. So we were actually sending power water over wire by increasing operations at Swan Lake, preventing the lake from spilling. We were shifting that water in effect from Swan to Tyee Lake, because we started operating Tyee at a less rate. That prevented spill at Swan. Once we began going into the cold snap and Swan started drafting, and there was no evidence of spill or more inflows on the horizon, we started shifting that power back south from Tyee. And we shifted about 6,000 to 7,000 megawatt hours during that period. And when the turn started here in middle of April, we realized after our snow survey how much water is effectively on both hills. And our plan has always been to bring the lakes up evenly, such that we actually lead the rise in lake level at Tyee versus Swan, so that we may spill at Tyee over a weir instead of spilling at Swan through a regulated electronic gate. It's a lot less risk. But so when we get to that point to where we're spilling, we prefer to try and spill at Tyee and only spill at Swan during events. That's where we sit right now. Total of 4,015 megawatt hours so far has been shifted to the south, and that accounts for almost the sum of what was shifted north and what was shifted south over the last 4 or 5 months. Other than that, the snow surveys, as I mentioned just quickly, there's a snow survey for Swan and a snow survey for Tyee. We have at Tyee, it was so deep in snow, our snow measuring device couldn't reach the bottom, so we had to take multiple measurements, and about half on the hill, we were able to reach it and actually take a measurement. But we have somewhere around 20 feet of snow at Tyee, and that's evident of our design on our snow pillows. This right here is the snow pillow that we built. That's 20 feet above the top of the snow where the actual solar panel sits. And that's kind of that was built based on our record. And so I'd say we're pretty close to a record here. I sent this data, these snow surveys to NOAA and actually USGS. They both requested it. And they said, yeah, you guys got a really good snowpack this year. So as Trey mentioned, that's an excellent thing, unless it all comes down at once. I mean, if we got a week of 80 degree weather and then a rain event on top of that, we would spill everything we have on the hill. But considering the way it's coming off the basin right now, and inflows are slower because of the temperatures, we are able to manage those lakes and operate them in a fashion where they're coming up nice and evenly, and it prevents it should prevent us from spilling prematurely. Swan Lake currently has 68.34 feet of water on the hill. We had that as of April 14th, and it can only hold in the reservoir approximately, at this point, we're looking at approximately 25 feet. So there's about 30 to 40 feet of water that will spill if it came down all at once. We're hoping with Tyee and Swan that it comes down slow and we use that water throughout this next 3 months and prevent as much spill as possible. So that's where we're sitting there for operations plan update. Do we have any questions or comments?
So if I might, Mr. Chair?
Yes, go right ahead.
Robert, looking at the two reservoirs, with Tyee being higher and released a little bit later, would you then, your thinking then, I guess, would be to use as much as you can out of Swan first and then go to Tyee? Is that still your thinking?
Yeah, so, Bob, the real thought process is here is try and manage both the lakes such that they have even amount of snow on the hill versus water in the lake when you add up the total amount of water in the basin and the spill above that. So we're trying to actually lean on Swan harder right now because Swan has more spill on the hill right now than Tyee. So we're trying to lean on it and get that more balanced in terms of if we were all to wash off the hill today, we want to spill evenly at each plant, but we want to actually raise the lake level at Tyee just ahead of Swan so that balance is actually leaned at spill more at Tyee. Because it's less risk for us as an agency to spill over a weir than it is to control and modulate a gate and use all our spill at Swan. Obviously, the gate is reliable. We've proven that last year. But wear and tear, maintenance, and risk is elevated by spilling at Swan. Whereas at Tyee, spill just goes over a weir and there's nothing to really monitor or be concerned with. So that's kind of our operations plan at this point is to draft to increase and fill the lakes at an even rate. And as we get closer to spill, to lean on Swan even harder and spill at Tyee to try and prevent Swan from spilling.
Thank you. Makes sense.
So, Robert, in regards to the different facilities, do you take into consideration any of the shutdowns, say, as when we're repairing the breakers at Swan or something, and how that's going to how we're going to handle water for those events?
Correct, Bob. So when I build the 2021 operations plan and I draw these lines up from the algorithms, these guide curves, we take into consideration the outages from the previous years. So those are already taken into consideration because we're using megawatt hours and how they are consumed as a function of previous years. The only thing we have to take into consideration in addition to our standard outage is if there are outages above and beyond. And for this year, there really isn't. I've gotten the station service project down to minimal outages, which really won't affect us much in terms of operations. And then our other outage that is outside the normal is going to be Petersburg outage for the submarine cable. And I have got that scheduled to the point to where most of the outage requirement for that project is going to fall within the already scheduled maintenance window that we already have an outage scheduled. So that kind of works out well. So additional days for diesel generation in Petersburg are going to be minimized by doing that.
Thank you. Anybody else have any questions in regards to the upcoming? Thank you for that, Robert. And you guys are still meeting on a Tuesday call, is that correct? Or going over
That's correct.
On a weekly basis. Thank you. That brings us to item 6B, update view of the wholesale power rate for discussion. That is on page 47. Trey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I touched on the wholesale power rate briefly before, and one of the nuances currently is that we've applied for this grant. And the premise for the grant is to help minimize or eliminate the need for a rate increase in the current economic downturn. And one reason I couched it that way is because if we just completed the project and there were infrastructure monies flowing later, then they'd say, well, your project's already done. So my recommendation at this time is to defer that, defer any decision on a rate increase until we know what's going to happen with the budget, and we may have to wait for a little while beyond this current month to see what rolls out in the special session and how some of those infrastructure monies may be allocated. So I'll just remind the board that we do have the rate stabilization that we can utilize for bridging this gap if necessary. So, and that's perfectly aligned with the intent for that, that particular fund. Right now, we're ahead on revenues, which is good. So I don't think we would have to dip into the rate stabilization fund yet. So we have a couple of pathways to go, and I've reached out to both Senator Stebbins' office and Representative Fez's office, and and we're working this issue very hard. So and we're also working through our lobbyists as well, our state lobbyists. So I'll just restate that is that so my recommendation right now is that we hold off on any formal action on this until we know a little bit more information on how things the outcome of some of this funding that's pending, and I think that there's going to be a lot of money flowing into the state, and we're one of the very few projects that is literally permitted and shovel ready. So I think there's a potential chance we may get some money here. So, and I think if we were to adjust rates right now, it would kind of defeat my argument on that, frankly.
So Trey, we're talking to 2.55 is what the ask is now, but is there a potential through the funds, because they're defined in infrastructure, and I think power is one of them, and it's not only just in, I believe, generate something, but it's also the transmission. Is there a potential for the submarine cable to fall and we get more of the $13.4 million out of the infrastructure bill?
So the way I characterized my request was we'd like a minimum of 2.255, but we would be happy to receive anything up to the whole price of the project, up to $14 million.
Thank you.
So I tried to leave that door open for some flexibility.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Trey, your fallback position, if the agency gets none of that money, what's your thinking in terms of that rate increase, and would you make any adjustments to your projects? What's your background thinking?
So earlier discussions with the board included, I'll say, an example scenario that we could do a quarter of a cent increase simultaneously. Oh, thanks, Robert. That's helpful. These numbers will be a little bit different because it was, I think it was based on a 5% interest rate. There it is. And so ours, this is obviously going to be a different, that's a column there. Those numbers would be more accurately reflected as 800,000. So with the numbers that we currently have. So I think we could potentially do a quarter cent increase 1 year, and then do a review within 6 months or to a year to do the second. With what I know now, it would take a minimum of 2 quarter cent increases to get the revenues to the point where we could handle the increase in debt service
And then there's the other element that we've discussed in the past that deals with, you know, just general increases in the cost of doing business over the last 20 some odd years. And there have been no adjustments for inflationary purposes. So I'm still aligned with this plan. I think it's still prudent. I'm just, I think we need to delay implementation of the plan for a few months till these things play out. And if we do need some funds to get us over the hump to make that first interest payment that will be due in January 1, then we do have the rate stabilization fund to fall back on.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just had a quick observation, maybe some food for thought. And obviously, the comments I'm about to make are in no way encouraging us to move forward with putting a rate increase sooner than later. But one of the things that I've noticed when we're looking at the economy, whether it's Ketchikan, I can't speak for what's happening in Wrangell or Petersburg, is that our governments have been harmed dramatically by loss of the cruise ship seasons because of loss of sales tax revenue. However, when we look at the health of the economy as a whole, meaning businesses and consumer spending and people actually buying things because of lots of reasons, federal money and the unemployment programs, but there's also a lot of boom in indirect payments and federal programs. There's been a lot of boom in the housing market. We've seen businesses growing in their off-season sales. We've seen a lot of construction occurring. As an example, we have Bobcat moving in here from Juneau and building a new facility. And they're not doing that because the economy isn't moving forward. So I guess my question is have you guys looked at what the actual economic damage that's been done to the region due to the pandemic, outside of the loss of revenues for the municipal government?
So obviously we're monitoring this, and you know, this data, I'll say, is somewhat of a lagging indicator, and a lot of that data is, I'm not even sure it's very mature enough that it's even available. Obviously, you can look at the Southeast Conferences, Southeast by the numbers, and that gives you a pretty good indication of jobs, of some of the other elements. So I think that will all play into it. I don't think anybody really has the answer to that, Jeremy, yet. You just take a step back and you go, well, look at the cost of a sheet of plywood, what it's done in the last couple of months. It's just crazy. And I don't think anybody has a good feel yet. Is that going to stifle new housing build-outs? Is that going to stall things while the supply chains have an opportunity to recover? I don't think anybody has a firm grip on that yet, but it could surely do so. The inventories on the markets, there's not much out there. So I'm a little bit in the wait-and-see mode there. I would be pretty speculative at this point. The whole cruise ship industry thing has been up and down and up and down. Maybe they're coming, maybe they're not. Realistically, at this point, I think you can ascertain that it's not going to be much happening this year. And the overall impact to the revenues to the communities, we'll see how that rolls out. I will add also that in my letters to the legislative folks that I previously mentioned, I did also highlight that, you know, we've had some devastating fishing related issues as well. And runs are down, the canneries and processing facilities have essentially left or consolidated. So there's a number of dynamics playing into this, and I don't have a good solid questions for where I think it's going.